And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome into another week here. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in on this special extra episode this week. Of course, last week our schedule got kind of thrown into flux, and that's what usually happens with Thursday games, Thursday primetime games, no less, where you have a Sunday game and then a Thursday game, and it's just a lot of post-game wrap-up all right in a row. We didn't get you that preview episode, but promised you this extra episode, and here we are. And today I wanted to make it all about what was on your mind, because you've heard me bloviate takes for the entire season, basically. And you've heard us have some guests on, and Matt Beauvais jumps in on the post-game shows. But I wanted to hear about what's on your mind and figuring out what exactly you're looking to as the season kind of shifts into the final portion. You know, the Bills are 7-4 on the year. They're a game down in the division, or half a game down in the division. And it's looking like it's going to be a battle to win the AFC East and get some breathing room, get a home playoff game, everything like that. And in their potential push for a Super Bowl, which seems, I think, probably based on how the season has gone so far, probably seems a little bit further away than where it did earlier in the year, especially right after that Kansas City win. You know, we've seen the Bills falter a bit, and now we have to see exactly what this team is made of and how they are going to move going forward. So we'll get into the New England game on the next episode and really break that down. And by the way, what I said last week, our guy Matthew Fairburn is going to be on for that episode. So be sure to tune in to that one, because that'll be good. Catching up with him and then also hearing things from a Patriots perspective as to why they have become such a thing in the NFL. But today is, like I said, all about you and what questions you might have, concerns you might have about this Bills team this year and also moving forward. So I opened it up, the forum on Twitter. I just asked, hey, if you have any questions, be sure to send them along, and then I'll do my best to answer as many as I can in the time that I have to record the show. So we'll just jump right into it. And I think the first place I want to start is with the biggest news item stemming from that Thursday night game, which was Tre'Davious White going down with a season-ending injury, torn ACL. He's done, and we'll see when he might be able to be back next year. But we do know that it is going to be Levi Wallace and Dane Jackson, at least for the interim. So our first question comes from @Dan_Austin_ I used to live the underscore life. I got rid of the underscore about, like, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. Kind of miss it, if I'm honest. But yeah, you keep repping the underscore world of Twitter, Dan. Dan writes, what schematic changes do you see happening to the Bills defense with Tre'Davious White being hurt? Now, that is a complicated answer because we don't really know just yet. I mean, you can effectively take guesses at what they'll do. Now, what Tre'Davious White was really good at is allowing the safeties basically to not pay too much attention to whatever was happening over there. I mean, they would keep an eye on what's happening if anything got behind Tre'Davious White. This is mostly a zone-based defense, and they would effectively, if if Tre'Davious White falters, then there would conceivably be someone there. But there's a lot of times that they're rolling coverages away from him because they know that they have it. They'll allow Jordan Poyer to play more of a hunch down in the box area as opposed to, you know, staying firm to what he is supposed to do on a given play. And these are all things that have taken this zone-based defense to a different sort of level this year. So Tre'Davious White is so integral, and all of the plays that he makes outside of his normal expectations for a given play. Like, I can't tell you how many times over the years that we've seen White sense something from the quarterback, leave the zone that he was dropping back into, playing a hunch because he's understanding what's going on around him, seeing the entire field, seeing the routes that are happening around him, and then playing the hunch to go hunt the football, either to break up a pass or to intercept the ball. We saw that. Let's see, what game was that? I think it was the Jets game. Yeah, it was the Jets game where he came away from his zone and then had enough time to where he could flip his body around and still come away with the interception of Mike White. Oh, yeah, that's right. It was White versus White. He does all of that for a defense, and they are losing all of that because now they have to pay special attention to what's going on with Dane Jackson. So I think I don't think we'll see any more blitzing or anything like that to try and overcompensate. I think they're going to play it pretty straight up as to what they normally call, except I don't think they'll be as willing to take as many schematic and, you know, spur of the moment chances as they would have without Tre'Davious White. So I'll be really interested to see how it kind of flips once we see the film after the upcoming game against the Patriots, but you just don't know at this point. And we'll see how they go about it that way. The next question stemming from the Tre'Davious White injury comes from at McCabeAJ192. His name is just AJ. So AJ asks, do you believe that the Bills have struggled being a front runner? In the past, they have always played the underdog. As unfortunate the Trey White injury is, do you see the Bills trying to play the underdog card now missing their best defensive piece? I mean, AJ, I know exactly where you're coming from here. I mean, this is something that I have brought up on the podcast a lot, and even in my writing too, where it seems like this team just has a different sort of edge when they feel like they've been disrespected. And it's borderline corny, right? Like, it's just total stereotypical, like, oh, underdog, gonna really rise up and prove everybody wrong. But this team has somehow legitimately thrived every single time, almost every single time that they have felt disrespected over the last few years. And going back to the Chiefs game, which is the only time where they were going up against a playoff contending team that they have also been the underdog in that matchup, and they just came through with the biggest answer possible. All the other games, like Steelers, Colts, these are examples of them not really living up to the moment. The Titans as well, not living up to the moment of being the team that is favored going in. They probably should have won two of those three games that I just mentioned, the Steelers game and the Titans game. I mean, they were basically 2 feet away from winning the Titans game, but they let that one slip through their hands on a lot of other plays than just that one. So I think there is something to do with that, AJ. I think you're onto something. This team has not lived up to it just yet. And maybe that's a part that they're struggling with, trying to manage being the team that's that everyone is trying to battle against and live up to, as opposed to them just trying to finally get over the top and become one of those top teams. The Tre'Davious White piece to it is interesting because I'm sure the defense is going to take this first week personally as to, you know, not being with their top cornerback. I don't know that I would say he's their best defensive piece. I think he's up there. Certainly, he is their most... He was the one that they could afford to lose least this year, which I think is a different conversation than best, just because of the depth at cornerback. I think that's the delineation between the two. But I think without him, there's going to be a certain answer. And I look at guys like Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer as the two guys that really embody this this line of thinking above all the other defensive players out there. They will have to do the most to compensate for Tre'Davious White. Also, the pass rushers will have to do a lot more and get into the backfield and be able to make an impact to where Dane Jackson isn't getting picked on by the Patriots this coming week against on the Monday night game. And certainly moving forward into the future. I think there is a certain amount of rallying to it where they can kind of play this underdog thing. You know, I don't think they're going to fall short of potential underdog pieces to this upcoming matchup because, of course, Trey White, they're down in the division. They're second in the division right now. Behind them, they would have to win just to get back into the lead. I think they'll be game for that one. I think the bigger question is, what do they do when they're playing teams like Carolina down the stretch of the season? You know, they're probably not going to be favored in Tampa. I think Tampa's one of the best, if not the best team in the league right now. So, not Tampa, but what do they do against Carolina? What do they do against Atlanta? What do they do against the Jets again? I mean, I think we know. And then what do they do if they are to beat the Patriots here and become that favorite again? What do they do in the return matchup? That'll be what ultimately, I think, defines who this Bills team is this season. We've seen a whole lot of flopping when favored against solid teams. We've seen very little of dominating when favored. And we've seen a ton of them coming up as underdogs and really punishing teams for being injured and using their backup quarterbacks. We've seen a lot of that. We haven't seen much of the other thing. So I'll be interested to see that, AJ. I think that's one of the biggest underlining things remaining of the schedule and how this team will ultimately play out this season, because it will mean a lot heading into the playoffs, especially if they end up winning the AFC East and have some home playoff games and have to defend their turf against these teams that they're just getting beat by at the moment, which is like the Colts, and we'll see what happens with the Patriots and everything like that. So to be determined there. But yeah, I think there could be a little bit of an extra push this week. Next up is a question from Nate, who is at BillsFan671. He writes, what is your best guess as to why the Bills have not addressed guard and cornerback depth the past 2 years? I think, at least for the guard position, I don't think that they value it positionally with their roster building philosophy. You know, there are certain outliers of prospects where you sit there and go, okay, this player is too good to pass up regardless of roster building potential. But guard is something that they just have not really paid a lot of attention to throughout their time building up this team over the past 5 years. Like, think back to their biggest strikes, whether it be in the draft or free agency. What do we have? Wyatt Teller, Jack Anderson. They ended up being wrong by trading away Teller, but he was a fifth-round pick. Jack Anderson was a seventh-round pick. They signed a couple of middle-tier guys like John Feliciano and Quentin Spain, neither of which really broke the bank. Just like these middling contracts that aren't really going to break you, that you can easily get out of, and it's not really going after a star guard for your entire process. I think that is the counterbalance to them going really hard at both offensive tackle and center. We've seen them spend a second round pick on Deion Dawkins, a third round pick on Spencer Brown. We see him then sign a pretty lucrative extension to Darrell Williams, who they expected him to be their starting right tackle this season. He only shifted inside to guard because he stunk up the joint when he was outside at tackle, and then Spencer Brown looked ready. They spent a lot of money at the center position, both in signing Eric Wood to a contract extension in the summer before his final season where he had to retire, and then Mitch Morse, another one who they signed to a huge contract in free agency, one of their biggest swings in free agency since Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have taken over. So when you assign all of that, all of those resources at those three positions, at guard, conceivably, you can get by a lot easier because those are easier to find in the draft later, and you don't have to use these precious resources. Cody Ford was a tackle when they drafted him. I mean, then he eventually moved inside to guard because he couldn't play tackle. So I think that's probably the reason why you're seeing them not addressing it with a huge resource. And I would expect that trend to continue, as in like a first round pick. I wouldn't rule out a second or third round pick, maybe if they just want to complete the line, but they still both have Feliciano and Darrell Williams signed to next year. So I don't think it's necessarily a shoe-in. As for cornerback, I'm with you. I don't know why. They believed that Levi Wallace could be a suitable starter for them, and they are right in that. Tre'Davious White is obviously their star. Taron Johnson is a good nickel. But Dane Jackson is a seventh-round pick from a year ago, been hit or miss every time he's been in the lineup, and they don't have anything past him. So now they're staring a situation in the face because of this Trey White injury of having either Saran Neal or Cam Lewis take legitimate snaps for you as a starting boundary corner. And Dane Jackson is the safest of the three, even though he's the most volatile of the three. Saran Neal is not a boundary cornerback. He's a special teams guy, and he is a coverage-for-hire guy based on matchup. Like, he'll match up against some tight ends, but he's just not a boundary cornerback. Cam Lewis, he's a nickel cornerback that can give you reps on the outside. Like, it's not promising if, even with Dane Jackson in the starting lineup, and if one of Jackson or Wallace get hurt, then, man, this becomes a humongous issue, even more so than it is now. That's why, earlier, I touched on it, that's why Trey White was the player they could least afford to lose on defense, and really the player they could least afford to lose only behind Josh Allen, in my mind. So now we get to see that depth and how it gets tested. They should have drafted a cornerback in the first four rounds over the last couple of years. They needed to do it, and they didn't. They neglected it. They neglected it in free agency. Just, it's a very interesting way to go about it. But they wanted to get better at defensive end, and they felt like their safeties could make up for if Tre'Davious White had to miss any time. Now we'll see that thought process be challenged. So I don't have a good answer for you, but I would expect that cornerback gets addressed very prominently in the draft this year, especially considering the timing of Tre'Davious White's injury. It's now late November. It's usually about a 9-month rehab process. Is he going to be ready for the start of the season? Who knows? Levi Wallace is also a free agent at the end of the year. We get to find out if Dane Jackson can be a starting answer for them moving forward. And if he's not, then cornerback becomes a huge need. But if he is, they still might need someone to help them get by till whenever Tre'Davious White gets ready to go. So a lot to think about. So I think that's going to be something they address moving forward here. All right. Next up, we have Lost Shepherd, at Lost Shepherd 2. He writes, I'm curious to have a breakdown of Greg Rousseau. He splashed on the scene pretty early, but has seemed silent since then. I'm wondering what a more experienced eye might be able to tell us about his progress and his play now compared to early on, and what the Bills think of his trajectory. I think right now, I had your name. Let me see if I can go back and find it. Let's see. Mark. This is Mark. Sorry for not including that at the beginning. Well, Mark, I think Russo has basically had the year of a rookie. He remains to me the most... He remains the guy that has the most potential. I think this year, and you're not going to like this, I think this year, his season has been kind of reminiscent of Trent Murphy. And I've kind of thought about this over the last month or so. And that's kind of the comparison here right now. Now, he does things way better than Trent Murphy, and he has more potential in a lot of areas. But right now, what he is a sound run defender that is here and there creating pressure in the backfield. It's not consistent. He's got to learn how to vary up his moves some more. And I think playing with a little bit more fire off the snap might help. But he is a damn good run defender. Like, to the point where he can be rushing upfield, keep the defenders off him with his super long arms, disengage, and then dive forward at the ball carrier who thinks that they have a rushing lane, and then get their legs to at least trip them up or to make the tackle himself. Like, that part of his game has been really good. The pass rushing has been just, I've mentioned this before, hit or miss. The consistency needs to be there. He's going to get the reps to kind of iron it out. And they're probably hoping that his best football is ahead by, you know, not giving him a ton of snaps. Like, he's not getting 80% of snaps. He's getting somewhere between 50 to 60 most weeks. He gets the start every single week, and he's going to be their left defensive end from here on out and moving forward. But it is also pretty telling that when the Bills get to third down, they are usually subbing in Jerry Hughes and Mario Addison as their pass rushing pairing. Unless those guys were just on the field for a bunch, and then Russo and one of Epinesa or Boogie Basham or F.A. Obata, one of those guys get out there. But for the most part, they look to get Hughes and Addison on the field. And I don't think that's damning. I think he's just a young player trying to figure things out from a pass rushing perspective. So I still think he has a lot of potential because he puts some things on tape where you're like, whoa, he can do that. And those are things that Trent Murphy could never do. But rookie year Greg Russo has basically been Trent Murphy in my mind. When Trent Murphy was actually getting some pressure on the quarterback early in his Bills career. Yeah, I think that's right around the comp because Murphy was still a pretty good run defender. I think Russo is a better run defender than Trent Murphy is, which gives him a leg up. And I think he has more potential as a pass rusher. So probably not the comparison you wanted to hear, but just know that I think there's a lot of meat on the bone there for Greg Russo moving forward. And I think he can be a pretty good player, and he's going to need to be because he's going to be a locked-in starter next year, especially if both Mario Addison and Jerry Hughes are no longer with the team because they are both free agents next year. So we'll see on that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Next question comes from at Anon371677769. Well, Anon371677769, you wrote, "Your first pick for the Bills in the 2022 draft is a guaranteed Hall of Famer. Which position do you select?" I thought a lot about this, and there are a couple of positions that spring to mind, because I think I first want to answer this based in reality, just because, you know, you have the Bills and they have Josh Allen. They just signed him to a $252 million contract extension. I don't think that they would spend an additional pick on a quarterback. So we're going to take quarterback out of the equation because it's just unlikely for them to do that. But I think all the other positions are on the table here. So it's basically saying, okay, which position do you think is most important to have a Hall of Fame talent? And the two spots that came to mind for today's NFL were defensive end, edge rusher, and wide receiver. At least for me. You can make an argument for a tight end because they're a game-changing talent, everything like that. And that's certainly a big component that you have to consider. But I think of those three spots, I probably pick wide receiver. Just because year over year, I think the most sustainable part of a team and their building structure is what they can do on offense. And if you can lock in, and I'm looking years down the line here, if you can lock in a Hall of Fame level talent at wide receiver, pair him with Stephon Diggs, and when Stephon Diggs' contract is up, he moves on to his next phase. Maybe they resign him, maybe they don't. He'll be in his 30s at that point. And then the draft pick guaranteed Hall of Famer becomes your number one, or your total number one, as opposed to 1A, 1B with Diggs, then you're still in a really good spot with Josh Allen as your quarterback, trying to find him and everything like that. Pass rusher is appealing because it affects the opposing quarterback, but I think teams can do more to take away that player than, say, a wide receiver, at least for me. I think there are unique ways you can get a receiver involved. And when you look at longevity, pass rushers are taking more hits and a lot more physicality at the line of scrimmage, a lot more potential to get rolled up on by an opposing team. Same thing with tight ends. They're in the trenches blocking a bunch. They're trying to keep their running game alive. They're helping add to that perspective. Sometimes they're kept in to block. A lot of hits that those two positions are going to take that would counter the overall longevity. So I think the wide receiver factor, pairing him with Diggs, pairing him with Allen, having them potentially for, I don't know, 10 to 15 years, I think that's a really good place to start. So yeah, I'm going with receiver. I know it's probably not what everyone else would go with, but I think it's just it's a way to help keep the Bills' fastball alive, which is their offense. And for as long as Josh Allen is going to be on the books with that contract extension of his, they're going to need some cheap pieces. And getting a Hall of Fame level wide receiver, especially if Diggs is moving on after his contract is done, then I think that's a pretty good place to start. All right, next question comes from Brad at bhesh34, And he writes, any movement or expectations about a long-term contract for Edmonds, will the cap space allow them to make a competitive offer? I think they're in a good spot right now with Edmonds to where they don't necessarily have to worry about it at the moment. I think that will be an emphasis for them in the summer, right before the season. He's still signed to next season. He's got the fifth-year option that is guaranteed money, so they know that. What they can do is a lot in the same of what they've done previously with some of these expiring contract guys, where they use that year coming up to help the contract extension to where they can kind of diversify where money is going, when money is going. So basically they can not rip it up. That money has to be included for 2022, but they can just repurpose it as long as that money is hitting. So you can even lessen his cap hit in 2022 and keep it moving forward to where the bigger cap hits will be hitting once the salary cap is projected to go up with all these new TV deals, gambling partnerships, things like that. There's going to be a spike year one of these years. And I think a lot of people are potentially looking at 2023 for something like that. So I think they're in a good spot right now. They look at him as the future of their defense. And I don't think, barring an injury, I don't think they're going to let Tremaine Edmonds go anywhere. He has been awesome this year. I think fans are, well, not all fans. I think a lot of fans were wise to it. But I think a certain portion of the fan base that did not think too highly of Edmonds heading into this year have reversed course for the most part. After seeing how important he is to this defense, how he's developed as a run defender, how good he is in pass coverage, how he affects throwing lanes, and how he reads quarterbacks, I think he's really hitting a stride this year. And, I mean, 23 years old. So he's going to be here for a long time. Next question, at Bill Took writes, what do you expect a new stadium will look like? What would you like to see in a new facility? Now, I'm probably in the retractable roof group, but I don't think that's going to happen based off everything that my colleague Tim Graham has reported. And, you know, it's looking like it's going to be happening in Orchard Park, and it's looking like it's going to be an open-air stadium because both of those things are the cheapest options, especially when you're building a pretty expensive structure. So I think they'll still bring about some historical parts to it and not make it look totally cookie cutter. This is another thing that I think you don't want to hear, but the one stadium that I would look at is Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. That outdoor stadium is awesome. If you've never had a chance to go, and you want to check out a Bills game there whenever the heck they're not going to be playing on a Christmas weekend, which has been consistent over the last 3 or 4 years at this point. It is a super cool concept because it's not a complete bowl. It has like different little nooks and crannies to it. The sight lines are super good. They have one part of their end zone that completely opens up to where you can see it from street level. When you're walking in, that's pretty unique. They also have like a little village of shops and stuff behind it, behind Foxborough, pretty close by within walking distance, to where you can go spend the day, or after the game lets out, you can go in there and find a place to have some food or some more drinks, things like that. It's all designed really well as like its own little college campus. And I think that would be a pretty cool thing for the Bills to do because they have so much room in the Orchard Park structure. Like, what's there? ECC is there on the one side where all the parking lots are. And then you've got on the other side, the obviously where the stadium sits now and their facilities. But if they could find a way to do a little bit of that Foxborough feel to it, I think that'd be pretty cool. Of course, they would want to design it in their own way. If I think they should try to avoid more cookie cutter stadiums like Cleveland. Trying to think another example of an outdoor stadium that isn't that great. I don't mind the Miami structure either, because they do it kind of like a soccer style, to where they have the coverage over where the fans are sitting, and they have the natural elements, whether it be sun or rain, definitely not snow down there, but they have that component to their stadium, to where it kind of keeps your crowd covered, but still the same elements remain. So I think that's kind of a unique thing, and that's something that you really only see in Europe outside of here. So there's just a couple of ideas if they're not going to do a retractable or an indoor structure. Those are pretty good ones. Let's see. Next up comes from @PlugFlowFrappe. All right. Assuming the Bills can win the division and at least get one of the wildcard teams in the first round, which of the teams in the hunt do you think the Bills should fear the most? Well, I think the Colts make a compelling case after they just blew their doors off a couple of weeks ago at home. But I do think the Bills will be more game for that one. I still think the Chargers are really darn good. And where the Chargers really struggle from a defensive perspective is as a run defense, and that's where the Bills aren't as strong. So I think there's some difficulties there. But honestly, I think the Bills should hope that the Colts are able to zoom up the standings and take down the Titans and put the Titans in a wild card spot, which I think is within the realm of possibilities based on all the players that the Titans are missing currently. You know, AJ Brown's on IR, Julio Jones has been out, Derrick Henry's on IR. What's left for Ryan Tannehill in that offense? And that defense is just okay. They're not really that great. So I think the Bills should root for the Colts to get that AFC South under control, because it's definitely possible. There's still a lot of time left for that to happen, especially with, you know, maybe how the Titans might see their next few weeks go. So I'll go with the Chargers and the Colts. Am I forgetting anybody? No, not the Raiders, not the Broncos, not the Browns. The Patriots, maybe. We'll have to see how those two teams go up against one another. But everybody else, like the Chiefs, they're gonna win the AFC West. I don't think the Bills should fear the Bengals. The Ravens are probably going to win the South. I don't think the Bills should fear the Steelers. I think they'll beat them the next time if they play them again. Yeah, I think it comes down to the Colts, Chargers, and Patriots. So, yeah, those would be the ones I'd have my eye on. And the Colts were a bad matchup for the Bills last year, too. So that's just a continuation. All right, next up comes from @AdamWilliams95. He writes, do you think you will ever add new awards based on some current players? That's a great question, because right now we have the Matt Barkley Award for the player that catches you surprise for good reasons. We have the Dree Archer Award for the player that just doesn't show up because he quite literally did not show up. We have the Vontae Davis Award for the player that doesn't show up in the second half for obvious reasons. And then also the Blaine Gabbert, Matthew Faber Award for perseverance, which has nothing to do with the Bills whatsoever. And the Gotta Watch the Tape Award for what Sean McDermott said back in 2018 after Nathan Peterman's horrendous performance against the Ravens in week 1. So I think there will be new awards added. It just has to feel right. Like, Vontae Davis, that felt right, right? I mean, that was, what, 2018? 2019? I can't remember now. But yeah, that was... and then Matt Barkley got added. So that was only a couple of years ago. I think we'll know the moment when something comes out of nowhere and you're just like, wow, this is so good that I have to name an award after it. I have faith that it'll happen again. Could even happen later this year. But so far, haven't seen it. But I have faith, Adam Williams. I have faith.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. Our final question is a fun one, and wanted to end on a fun one. Comes from at JohnBrown557. Hopefully not that John Brown, but I don't think it is. He writes, what is the funniest story you have from your time on the beat? Now, there are, I would refer you to the episode right in the off season when Mike Rodak, who used to cover the Bills for ESPN, was leaving to move down to Alabama. He's now covering the Crimson Tide for AL.com, by the way. It was me, him, and Matthew Fairburn just talking about a ton of stuff from the beat. So if you have time to go dig that one up, by all means, go find it. For now, I'll give you three different things that were my favorite. Two were team involved. One was just like on the beat involved, because it's just a great story. The first one actually both of them are Ryan Fitzpatrick stories, which leaps and bounds. Funniest guy I've ever covered. There's really no question in my mind. The first story, I remember I was walking back towards the locker room and Fitzpatrick decided to join me, and we walked back down towards that way together, and he comes up to me and goes, "What do you know, Skaggs?" And I'm like, little backstory, Skaggs is like my childhood nickname from first grade. No one in the professional realm really knew about it, anything like that. Just my closest friends and everybody that knew me growing up. To everybody else, I was just Joe Biscaglia or Joe B, whatever the mood strikes you. So when he looked at me, this was back in, I think, like 2011 or 2012. And I'm like, "Who do you know?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "You just call me Skaggs." He's like, "Well, you don't have to be a Harvard grad to realize that your nickname is Skaggs." So I thought that was pretty funny. Just a little one-off type of humor from Fitzpatrick playing on the Harvard thing. Another funny story I had was Ryan Fitzpatrick involved, where he came up to me after practice one day. And I think this was either my first or second year on the beat. I can't remember which one. But he comes up to me and goes, "All right, what size is your waist?" I'm a thin dude. I'm a slender dude. I was even thinner back then. So I'm like, where's he going with this? And I'm just like, 32? And he goes, "Oh," I'm like, "Why? What's going on?" And he's like, "Me, Brom, and Levi Brown had a bet going as to what your waist size was." And I'm just like, "Well, who won?" And he's like, "I think Levi did." So Levi Brown won the waist size. And this was pretty commonplace, like that sort of atmosphere when Ryan Fitzpatrick was the quarterback. A lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff, a lot of stories that will never see the light of day that were hilarious, but those are just two little one-offs. He's a very, very funny guy, and he is stuck around the NFL for a lot longer than I think anyone has ever anticipated that he would. But yeah. All right, now to a story that has nothing to do with the Bills or the players themselves. It's all travel induced. So a lot of times when you're going on the road, there's people that work at different companies, but you're all going to the same place. So a lot of times you compare travel notes to see if you're going on the same planes, same connectors, you know, where you're staying in the same hotel, just because, you know, if you have like a little community that goes down to a game, you know, hang out with them. So the 1 year, I don't even remember when, it might have been when we were going out to California. We were connecting to a flight through Detroit, and we had a 50-minute layover. At the time, I was working for Channel 7. Matthew Fairburn was working for Syracuse.com, and Jay Skirsky, who works for the Buffalo News, obviously still was with the Buffalo News back then. And so we were on the same flight going from Buffalo to Detroit. We had a 50-minute layover, and this was before the time of Chick-fil-A being in Buffalo. So Jay and his wife are huge Chick-fil-A enthusiasts. And so he's just like, all right, we got to get Chick-fil-A. We just need to make it happen before we get on this long flight out west. So me and Matthew Fairburn were like, yeah, we're game. Let's go. So we get into, I believe it's the B terminal at Detroit, which is, for my money, the single longest terminal. We were flying Delta. So it was the single longest terminal that I've seen in all of my travels so far. And like, we got off the plane around like, I don't know, B9. And the Chick-fil-A was all the way down like past B65 or something in that realm. And we're just like, all right, we've got 50 minutes, and you know, the Chick-fil-A usually has a line, so got to do a little bit of hustling here. So we walk all the way down, and really like power walking, not running, but a very brisk walk, using as many moving walkways as we could, get all the way down, and we get to the line. Not a horrible line. So Jay is first in line. Matthew and I are behind him. So Jay goes and orders his food. We order our food. We're all waiting. Wait like maybe 5-10 minutes. We're about like 15-20 minutes before the flight leaves. And Jay sees his food and is like, all right, boys, meet you down at the gate. He grabs the food and just takes off. Me and Fairburn look at each other like, okay. So he's bolting down the way. Eventually, Fairburn and I get our food like maybe within the next couple of minutes. And so I look up, I'm like, there's that train up there. I want to see if we can do that. And he's like, yeah, sure. So we walk up the stairs, and there's a train that goes from one side of the B terminal in Detroit to the other. And so we're just like, okay. We waited like, I don't know, 30 seconds to a minute for the train to get to us. The train is there, starts going. And as we are going down, you know, casually eating our Chick-fil-A, we see Jay Skirsky just busting it down the Detroit terminal. Through, like, he's still got a good like 30 gates to go. And we are just well past him. We get off the train, casually walk down the stairs, waiting for our group to be called. We see Jay come up to us, just completely sweating, just dripping in sweat. He's like, what? How did you guys do that? We just pointed up to the train. He's like, oh my God. Just an incredible story. And I think the biggest part about this, so we, on the way there, and once we got to our seats on the plane, we casually ate our meals. And then Jay, for some insane reason, because he was running, put the Chick-fil-A in his bag, put the bag up in the top compartment. So he had to wait until they undid the secure seatbelt sign for him to go up and eat it. So his entire bag reeked of Chick-fil-A. And he ended up eating Chick-fil-A cold. So long story short, could have been avoided by Jay just waiting that extra minute for us to, you know, try out the train. But and from here on out, he uses the train back and forth to Chick-fil-A. But yeah, that was a hell of a time, and it's one that we recall every once in a while. That of travel stories we will never forget. All right, I think that's going to do it for us on this version of the Q&A. Thanks to everyone for submitting those questions. We'll be back later this week, and we'll be doing a preview podcast episode of the Bills up against the Patriots. And our guy, Matthew Fairburn, will be on. He is now the Patriots writer for The Athletic, and he'll be joining us to go over what it could be the biggest game of the year for both of these teams. So it should be fun. All right, and if you haven't yet, head over to theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat to get your subscription to The Athletic. Again, that's theathletic.com/thebuffalobeat. All right, everybody. My name is Joe Biscali. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode. We will talk to you later this week. See you then.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.